I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. The People's Podcast has arrived. The remedy for boredom is here. Let's go for a ride. And I want to welcome Talk is Jericho's newest sponsor, Burger King, baby. That's huge. That's some mainstream sponsorship coming on board. And we thank all the fine folks at Burger King. I'm telling you what, you already know Burger King can lay down some serious grub. How about the new thing they got? How do you capture the flaky, buttery lightness of your favorite breakfast sandwich? You know how? But you say croissant. Now you can get two croissant for $4 only at Burger King. Restrictions apply. Now that is cookie, yo. Now, speaking of cookie, big news this week, Skid Row with my good friend Snake Szabo announced a big change in the band, and Snake and Rachel Bolan are here. And Rachel, we've never actually met before. I appreciate you calling in, and I give you great credit for putting up with Snake for the last 30 years.
Well, day's not over.
So the big announcement that Johnny Solinger is out of Skid Row and you have a new singer. Tell us about this, Snake.
Well, we had been thinking about this for a few months now, maybe even longer than a few months. With all due respect to Johnny, it was a great time that he spent in the band. I mean, he was in the band for 15 years, and we did a lot of great things together, and had so many great memories. He's a really good guy. It wasn't anything about that. It just felt like things were, just not going the way that we wanted them to at this point. And it got to the point where, Rachel and I spoke, and Scotty, and we just decided that, you know what, maybe it's time that we make a change. And Tony Harnell has been a friend of ours for a long time from TNT, and we contacted him, asked him to come down and jam with us in Atlanta, and he did, and it felt really, really good. And then we felt, you know what, let's do this, let's make a change. And so we made a phone call to Johnny and said, you know, we're going to make a change, and thank you for everything, and you've been great, but this is just, I think, the right thing for all of us. And then made the move and officially announced that Tony Harnell is now the singer of Skid Row.
I think it was kind of and you and I talked about this for a while. I remember you were kind of asking me some what I thought about certain things. I think it was really a smart move for you guys to announce the new singer the day that you announced that Johnny was out of the band. I mean, obviously that was a calculated decision.
Go ahead,
Snake.
No, we wanted to do this thing in a manner that it was seamless. The transition has to be quick, and we need to maintain all of our obligations and move forward. And you know, Chris, if you know as well as anybody, information moves so fast in this day and age.
Right.
That it moves and then it goes and then it's, you know, we move on to something else. So we didn't want there to be a lull or anything like that. We needed this transition to be as smooth as possible for everybody, and for Johnny as well, so he can go about doing what he needs to do. And it's important that the audience, you know, a lot of the audience, we believe, knows Tony already, but now it's really important for us to have our audience become, I guess, ingratiated with him as a new singer of the band. And, you know, he's a pro. He's a great singer. He's a great front man, and he's been a friend for quite some time. So it's really exciting. It's really, really exciting for us right now.
First of all, props for using ingratiated. That's a big word for a rocker from New Jersey.
props to some dude from Winnipeg who actually knows the meaning of it.
I didn't say I knew the meaning of it. I just said that props to you for using it. I'll look it up later as I Google. Did you think when you're talking about getting a new singer? And it's funny because you said Johnny in the band for 15 years. It's like, wow, he's been in the band longer than Sebastian Bach ever was. But yet still kind of looked at as the new guy, you know, as far as the singer goes. When you were thinking about bringing a new guy, did you think it was important to bring in somebody like Tony who has name value from TNT? Or did you think that you might be able to bring in kind of a guy with a new guy? I mean, was it important to you to have somebody that had a lineage? How did you feel about that?
I think it was important. I mean, it was in the back of our minds, but it wasn't first and foremost. We thought of Tony, you know, because we're a fan of Tony Harnell. You know, we think
sure.
he's a great singer, and he had left TNT. He had just left TNT, actually, and so we're like, well, he's definitely available.
so that helped.
Yeah, so let me shoot him a text and see what's up. And so, you know, like Snake said, we've been friends with Tony for, 25 years, Snake, at least?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And always got along great and always thought he was a really cool guy. And the fact that he does have a name, it appealed to us, you know? And everything just kind of aligned really quick and really well. And, you know, I think it's cool. We're getting a very positive reaction to him being in the band.
Well, it's funny. My friend goes right off the bat. He goes, if they don't play as 10,000 Lovers in One as the encore, I'm not going to the show. I mean, but people are buzzing over the fact that, you know, the dude from TNT is in Skid Row. I think it's pretty cool.
I won't see him at the show.
See you later, Jeff from Las Vegas. You're not coming. You're not allowed.
But
I mean, I didn't realize that you knew him for so long. I always thought he was from like Norway or wherever the hell TNT is from. I didn't realize he was like a Jersey guy or a New York guy.
Yeah, he's been living in New York for quite a long time. He's originally from California.
Really?
But,
okay.
I believe so. Am I correct, Sam?
Yeah, he's from San Diego, and then he moved.
Right.
I mean, he was in bands. Sharing bands with the Anthrax guys way before anybody was making records.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they were.
So, I mean, TNT is out of Norway, though.
Right. Yeah, they are.
Yeah, TNT's out of Norway, and they were. It's interesting because they actually worked with Doc McGee right before we started working with Doc McGee. So there's a weird sort of cross-pollinization there that we've always crossed each other's paths, and it took this long to work together. But, yeah, we're still – it's such the beginning stages, and everything is all new, brand new, and exciting. But it's really – it's cool to hear him sing these songs because he's, you know – he's got a pretty incredible voice.
Well, he's always had, you know, we were laughing about TNT, but in TNT he really had that high range, whereas a lot of the Skid Row songs also have a very guttural, ballsy sound. He must have that quality to his voice as well. We haven't really heard a lot of Tony singing that way, though.
I don't know if you ever heard the Westworld stuff he did with Bruno Ravel.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, he does sing like that. And because we thought the same thing. We're like, you know, all we knew was from TNT was how high he sang. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we went online and we listened to a bunch of stuff and we were like, wow, he's got this other range that we weren't even aware of. He's got a 4-octave range.
Wow.
So it's, you know, the thing that really grabbed us, we went online and looked at I think it was a benefit or something, and him and Michael and Oz from Striper were doing an acoustic version of More Than a Feeling by Boston.
Yes.
And we were like, wow, wow, you know, and it blew us away, you know, and like we said, he's a bud. So it makes it that much easier to make a transition like this.
That's also so important, too, as you know, when you're on the road for, you know, 3 weeks in Europe or whatever it may be. Yeah, the time on stage and whether he can do the gig is obviously, you know, paramount, but it's what the guy is like off stage as a dude on the bus in the backstage area. And you guys love to bus balls. I mean, it'd be hard to kind of come into the camp if you didn't know that that's your attitude.
He actually calls us the Compliments. I want to change the name of the band to the Compliments because we never give it. It's the only compliment. It's like, hey, asswipe, how you doing?
This poor guy is, I mean, dude, you know how it rolls. This poor guy is just getting it, like, just brutal verbal assaults.
I told him straight up, I was like, hey, man, you can't be delicate.
Right.
There's no being delicate around us, man.
You won't last. You better jump in with both feet, man. Yeah, exactly.
For real.
I mean, obviously, the question that everyone's asking, you know, is of course, when you're thinking about changing singers, and then it's like, well, what about Sebastian Bach? You know, reunion rumors are always swirling. And, I mean, is it something that I know that you guys play music because you love to play music and you want to have a good time. Is this why there's not even any consideration to play with Baz anymore? Did you even think about it for a fleeting second, or was it never even something that was even considered?
It wasn't even, I swear to you, it wasn't even considered. And that's it's no disrespect to anything, our past or anything like that. It wasn't considered. When the idea started bouncing about our heads, about making a change, it would be to get somebody that we hadn't worked with before. It's just the way it felt. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like we were weighing and measuring whether we should attempt a reunion or not. And a lot of people will say and what they want to say about that, and that's fine. That's all well and good. It's just that for us, and dude, you know me long enough to know that, no one's allergic to money, but you have to be happy doing what you're doing. And this is what makes us happy, the way that we're doing it right now. And that's always been paramount. Whenever things weren't making us happy and it was an unenjoyable situation, then we went about making a change, and that's kind of where we're at now. So we were looking forward. We were just looking ahead to what would be next, and this is where we are.
What's the reaction from the Skid Row fans been so far?
I'll tell you what, it's been pretty overwhelmingly supportive. I mean, I've been getting calls from everyone from promoters to just friends and family and just other rockers and stuff and artists, and they're like, dude, you guys and Tony, it's a perfect fit, you know, and crazy supportive online. Fans have been very supportive, and you get the holdouts, but it's been really overwhelming, like to the point of shutting the phone off and having to throw the computer out in the backyard so that you don't hear your alerts going off, you know.
But I mean, in our country, obviously, we're talking about TNT, and you like, oh, I remember TNT. But Tony Harnell actually has a really big name worldwide, and I know this from working in Japan so extensively and in Europe. I mean, I think this is actually, it's one of those things that you think about it, it's probably going to breathe a whole new life into Skid Row just by the fact that he's in the band now.
I think we absolutely hope so. You know, that's one of the reasons why we wanted him in the band, was we were hoping for that. And again, you know, these things, this particular thing seems very serendipitous, the way it all went down. There you go. There's another word for you, buddy.
Jeez, man. I'm writing all these down for later.
Yeah, guess that one. Crazy.
Serendipitie. Okay, I got it. Serendipity.
E-I-E-I-O.
I'm going to use that.
Yes. I'm going to start using all those words in like your accent on your the way you pronounce words on your intro, like schwaz. I mean, like serendipitoire.
So is the whole thing has become very serendipitoire because
because everything just seemed to be in the right place at the right time.
Right. has there been any reaction from Sebastian at all? I imagine that was probably going, "What the hell?"
Apparently.
Dude, what the hell, dude?
And I'm sure he is somewhere.
Somewhere. But it doesn't really matter because the most important thing is like you mentioned, you guys being happy with what you're doing. And I mean, I'm sure it's hard in this day and age after being in a band for so long to have to let somebody go. But it's probably a little bit exciting at this point in time.
You go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, it is. You know, this was honestly throughout our whole career, this was the roughest thing we ever had to decide. You know, and because we spent so much time with Johnny, and he was like a brother to us, you know, but things just happened, man. And, you know, it was horrible. But on the other side of it, yes, we are very excited because, one, the positive reaction we're getting, and, two, it's change is good sometimes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to be changing my whole life right now because I'm moving out of state.
So you're really going all the way.
Woo, man, I'm going to go out and get a face tattoo. Get a Batman mask on my face. But, yeah, it is pretty exciting, you know.
What's the plan then? Go ahead, Snake.
Well, Chris, I'm actually changing into MeUndies right now just to give you a
– You're such a talk as Jericho, Mark, Snake. You've heard all the episodes.
I told you that years ago, though. I'm not even a smart Mark. I'm just a Mark, man.
You know what the funny thing is, Rachel? We get our downloads, you know, every week to see how the shows are doing. And I just got the new report about 2 weeks ago. And Snake's show is – Snake was on right before Christmas. His show is almost at 1 million downloads. And I have no idea why.
I've never found him that entertaining.
I know. And then I thought maybe people thought it was Snake Plissken, or maybe they thought it was Jake the Snake Roberts, or I'm not sure what. Maybe they thought it was a Snake Charmer. I'm not sure why people listen to that show, Snake, but you're a hit.
They thought it was the singer from Voivod.
Exactly.
He's far more popular than me.
No, they thought it was actually a snake.
Yeah. I've actually captured a talking snake. It's the craziest thing. You got to listen. I like how you pronounce the name Voivod. Where we came from was always just Voivod.
Voivod.
That's from all the time you spent in France. Yeah. I don't even know what that means.
But learning words like serendipitoire. So what is the plan now with Tony and the band? Are you guys going to record some new music? Are you going to hit the road? What's the thought?
Yeah, all the above. Actually, we've been writing for a while. Snake and I have, and we're going to start working him into the new stuff so he can make it. You know, have some of his own stuff. You know, and we're going out on the road. I think our first shows are May 22nd, 23rd up in Canada.
Saskatoon, I saw. Your opening show with your new singers in Saskatoon.
Hey, buddy, welcome to the band.
Remember Skid Row? Platinum selling albums? We're going to Saskatoon, baby.
We're going to rock it out. What about L.A.? No, man.
Nope.
That's where it's
Tokyo?
At.
Tokyo? Nope. Saskatoon, dude.
Saskatoon. Mother tune. So we're doing that, and then we have that big show out in Vegas that's being filmed with a few shows beforehand. I think one in Los Angeles somewhere. You can see I'm really up on our schedule.
Exactly. We'll just Google it later on. Whatever.
Yeah,
we'll figure it out.
When
you guys get a new singer, I mean, obviously, I'm sure with Johnny, you have a set that you play of, you know, 15, 16, 17 songs. With Tony, do you add a song? Is there something that you haven't played in a while that you think, oh, man, now that we have Tony in the band, we can do this? Or do you pretty much just keep it business as usual with the songs that you're doing?
We started work on a couple things, you know, with – We haven't done songs like Quicksand Jesus in quite a while, so we started doing that again. There was some newer stuff as well that we started working on, stuff that was on on the Thick Skin record. But I think I'm trying to think of all the stuff that we worked on when he was first down there. We were the great thing about it is, you know, when you have this new voice that comes in the band and he's already established as a pretty renowned and well-known frontman, he's got a certain confidence that he brings with that he kind of goes into it basically like, I can sing anything you guys put in front of me,
right.
So let's go. And that really is inspiring. So you get to explore, you know, things that maybe you haven't touched in quite some time. It was great to go play Quicksand Jesus again. It had been a few, few years or whatever since we had done that. And so I'm sure there's going to be other songs that we're going to look back on and songs like Psycho Love and things like that we will approach again.
Do you guys ever do anything from Subhuman Race? That's like, is that like the forgotten record in the catalog?
No.
We do Beat Yourself Blind every now and then.
Okay.
Yeah. We'd Beat Yourself Blind. There were some songs that we would do off of it that just didn't translate. Like, I remember back in the day, we were doing, like, My Enemy, and we're like, oh, we love this song, you know? It was the first single off it. It went over like a fart in church, man. It just did not translate. And so that's frustrating when things like that happen. But we would do, we've done Breaking Down here and there. And so I think we're going to probably revisit some of that stuff as well, just to see where it would fit within the whole grand scheme of things. But Beat Yourself Blind was always the one that stood out. So I'm sure we're going to, like Rach said, we're going to go back to that at some point.
Well, it's an exciting time, man. Like I said, whenever something like this happens, it does breathe new life into the band. And I'm really excited to see how Tony sings those old songs and the stuff that you're going to come up with him. And I think the fine people of Saskatoon are in for a big, big treat with this is like Skid. It's like Deep Purple now. Is this Skid Row Mark III?
That's a thing.
Yeah.
If you really want to get technical, it's actually Mark IV.
Okay. Yeah. Who was the Mark I then?
There was a kid named Matt Fallon that was in the band.
He was also in Mark I of Anthrax too, right?
Yep. Yeah. Mark II of Anthrax.
He should start a band called Mark. Oh, he was in Mark II?
Yeah, he was because they had Neil Turbin before him.
Oh, so he was after Neil Turbin. Okay.
Yeah.
You guys are way too metal for me.
Yeah, this conversation has gone from TNT to the first singer of Anthrax to Voivod. We are super, super metal right here, right now. I could throw out a Prunella Scales reference as well, just for you, Rach.
I am impressed.
What was that guy's name that was in the band that you brought that one time in Japan? Wally or Woody or what was his name?
Oh, Elwood.
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 There you go.
Elwood works with Billy Gibbons. He's been Billy Gibbons' guitar tech for like the last 15 years.
Wow.
Yeah, yep. At least.
There you go. From Prunella Scales to Billy Gibbons.
He still gets the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter.
And so do you.
Yeah, no,
shut up. Shut up, man. Rachel Snake, man, it's great to have you guys on. We're really excited to hear this new version of Skid Row. And Rachel, it's nice to finally meet you for once. You and I should kick Snake out and just go hang out one time. We'd probably have much more fun.
All right, cool, man. Totally. We were actually gonna ask you to join the band, but we couldn't compete with a lighted jacket, so we were like, nah.
Do you know how much money it costs to get a road case for that jacket? That thing is such a pain in the ass, man. I'll tell you what. Forget it. You'd be better off. You'd be better off getting a talking snake. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the platform, bud. I really appreciate it, man. We'll have some stuff for you to play real soon, too.
Looking forward to it. Talk to you soon, guys.
All right, buddy. Later. Bye-bye.
So there you have it. Straight from the horse's ass. I mean, horse's mouth themselves. Snake and Rachel will appreciate that. Skid Row talking about their new singer, Tony Harnell, will be back in the studio this summer recording the third chapter of the United World Rebellion trilogy. I guess that's obvious. And as Snake and Rachel mentioned a minute ago, Tony will make his live debut with Skid Row in Saskatoon this month. If you're from Canada, you call it Saskabush, eh? Saskatoon, great rock and roll city. Wise cousin Chad grew up very close to there. He might have even went to the University of Saskatoon, as well as, what's the good word, Todd? Dean Mullen out there rocking it in Saskatoon. Skid Row will be making their debut with Tony Harnell, and I'm making my debut with The Walking Dead, one of my
my favorite shows, and I'm super stoked to have Josh McDermott, a.k.a. Dr. Eugene Porter.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
I cannot abide a reality where you are the chosen navigator over a son of the South, who has successfully negotiated the travails and vagaries of journeys both real and virtual.
All right, here from the probably the biggest show, I think, in America right now.
I would say the world.
In the world.
Just from the response I get overseas, I would say the world.
I would agree with you on that. I got Josh McDermott here from Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And it's funny because in my stupid mind, for some reason, I keep calling you in my head Josh Hutcherson.
Oh, interesting.
Which is
okay.
The kid from Hunger Games.
Hunger Games, yeah.
So I've written that down a couple times, Josh Hutcherson, and then today I was looking it up, your Twitter address, so I could put it up on Twitter, and I was like, wait a second, that's not him.
You're
wait
tweeting
a second,
the wrong guy.
McDermott. Yeah, so... But yeah, dude, so you're talking about how, you know, on a worldwide basis, like from what, have you traveled around since you started doing Walking Dead? Or?
Well, just doing, you know, just talking to people and then doing Twitter and Instagram.
Right.
I mean, half the people that follow me are overseas. They're in Europe. Brazil is huge. Hi, Brazil. They go nuts when you give them a shout out. Argentina, they start getting jealous if you only talk about Brazil. Hello, Argentina. But somebody was telling me that I think we have something like 20 to 24 million people in America who watch the show. In China, it's 30 million. Now, if you think about that, in China, that's nothing.
Right.
That's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, that's like,
you know what
like
I mean?
0.001%.
I know.
Right?
So I'm just like, good grief. There's more people in China that watch this show than in America, and it's probably not even a hit in China just comparatively. So it's pretty intense just to hear about, you know, we do these conventions around the mm-hmm. world I only go around the country. I haven't been overseas yet, but just the feedback I'm getting from some of the other cast members who've gone overseas, they're like, dude, it's insane. Like, you have to get overseas. It's crazy.
It's one of those things, like, I know from a wrestling standpoint, if you wrestled, like, in the quote-unquote attitude era, which was 99 to 2002-03, if you leave the business, you can work basically forever because people watched you during those glory days and you
right.
can go to conventions or you can work wherever. It's the same for Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Like, the longer you're on the show, the more retirement insurance you're getting
yeah.
for when it's done.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, it's crazy to see that, you know, some of these conventions, there's people that have done one, two episodes.
Right.
You know, and they still have a line of fans that want to meet them, and you're like, wow. I'm pretty lucky that I've been on this long because, like you said, the longer you go,
yeah.
the kind of the more insurance and things like that. I mean, really, I only look at each job as like, how is it going to get me the next job?
Sure, of
you
course.
Know? I'm extremely blessed that I've landed on this show because it was my favorite show.
Really?
My wife and I watched it. We would have friends over and everything. So it's like a dream, you know.
Mm.
I imagine, you know, you were pursuing professional wrestling for so long and it was such a part of your life. And once you finally got to a certain pinnacles, you're like this, you're pinching yourself going, how am I here? This is great.
Totally. You know, it's funny when you're talking about the conventions, like I know sometimes I'll go to them or I'll go online because I'm a big horror fan.
Uh-huh.
And I'll see like, I don't know, I think the guy's name is Ari Lehman. He's the guy that played the kid in Friday the 13th that comes out of the water at the end with the weird kind of like mongoloid
yeah.
face. And that's the picture that he has that he signs. And of course, it's been 30 years. He's like a guy now. And it's like, that's all you got? But he's like, I said one time, that's all you got? He goes, that's all I need, dude. I make thousands off that picture. And I'm like, really? For that?
People love it, man.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes we'll be at a convention because the cast of people changes. but like Robert Englund will be there. I can't think of the guy's name.
Bruce Campbell's always there.
You know, he's the darling of these conventions. And then the guy from Gremlins, I can't think of his name, but I met him the other day.
Zach Galligan. There's an obscure.
And I was like, and he still looks, he's older now, you know, but he looks like the kid from Groundlings, or not Groundlings, Gremlins. And I'm like, oh my gosh, man, this is like, your movie scared the crap out of me when I was a kid, you know? So it's like, it's fun for me as a fan. And just to see these people, like, it doesn't matter if you just had that one kind of obscure film or if you've been in like a bunch, you know, someone like Bruce Campbell who just, it doesn't matter what he does, it just continues to pile on and the fans love him. And so it's great.
What did you, was there a casting call for Eugene or how did you get involved? How'd you get the part?
Yeah, so I had done, so I have like a comedy background. I did stand up and sketch.
Your
and
last comic standing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's mainly what I'd been focusing on was just, you know, doing comedies and stuff. And so I got onto a sitcom called Retired at 35, which was on the TV Land Network. They do like
They do the one with Valerie Bertinelli and
Betty White. Yeah, so that was their first original show because, you know, before they were only doing like reruns of I Love Lucy or Home Improvement and stuff like that. So the Hot in Cleveland show, the Valerie Bertinelli and Betty White show, and our show, Retired at 35, were the first two original.
Who was the star of that? Sorry, Retired at 35.
George Siegel.
Okay.
Legendary actor. I mean, pretty much somebody had told me, like in the 70s, it was him and Jack Nicholson were kind of the Matt Damon.
They're the guys, and Bruce Affleck, or Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck at the time. And then Jack Nicholson continued to rise, and George Siegel went into a little bit of obscurity, and then he started slowly coming back, and then he was on a show called Just Shoot Me, late
David
90s.
Spade, right? Yeah.
Yeah, hilarious show. And so he played the father, and then Jessica Walter, who played the mom on Arrested Development. Was the mother, and then you know, they just kind of filled in. We lived in this retirement community, and I was like, I played the best friend of their son, and you know,
was it the wacky best friend?
I was crazy, man. It was like right in my wheelhouse, right? So I was like, yeah, okay.
Can I borrow some sugar?
Yeah. Hey, I'll make out with that old woman. I don't care. Like that was kind of a lot of the jokes. It was fun because you know, I also lived in the retirement community with my old elderly parents. I lived in their garage and stuff like that.
Real?
No. Oh, like okay. On the show.
Gotcha. No. Method acting, man.
Yeah, right. I'm like, Dad, can you move into this retirement community?
Come on, it's going to help my career.
Get into character. So, you know, I'm on this sitcom, and it was pretty much like the best acting training. It was the first thing I'd ever done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did a little like web series or like little things here and there, commercials, whatnot.
But playing in the big leagues.
Yeah. All of a sudden, I'm on this sitcom, and I'm going, this is like the best training I could ask. I'm getting paid to learn how to act from these legendary actors, right? And so then the whole time I'm doing that, I'm thinking, well, maybe I need to get into an acting class and start studying drama, you know? So I started doing that and slowly but surely started to gain the confidence that I could do a dramatic piece. And at one point I just called my agents after about 2 years of doing that. I said, hey, start sending me out for drama roles. And they said, okay. And literally The Walking Dead was the first thing they sent me out for.
Wow.
And I booked it. And I was like,
and what was the part? What did it say?
So they're real secretive about like who they're casting because it's a comic book. And they may have a character from the comic. They may do a remix of that character. They might want to change his name or whatever.
Yeah.
They just want to, like, change everything. So I think the name that I went out for was Wayne Kesey. And I knew it was a comic book, but I hadn't read it. And so Wayne Kesey was the character's name, and it pretty much described exactly who Eugene was. You know, maybe a bit socially awkward and you know, extremely intelligent and this and that. And so then they give you this audition material and it's like 6 pages of pretty much a monologue. And I think so I did 2 rounds of auditions with that. And the first audition, it was a monologue of me backstage with this woman. And we're about to give this big scientific presentation before this, like the world's best scientist, right? And we're backstage and she's like, you know, are you ready to go? Can you handle this? And I don't care about the presentation. I'm like berating her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my way of flirting with her. And it was just this weird, messed up scene that they just wrote. It had nothing to do with The Walking Dead.
I see.
They just wanted to see these moments, these things that the character could do. And so we went through that, and that was a lot of fun. And then with the callback, I came in and did another six-page scene, literally just a monologue where I'm at my 10-year high school reunion, and I've cornered the captain of the football team and the head cheerleader and pretty much told them how better I was than they were. You know, I'm just a better person than you, and just, again, berating them and telling them I'm better than you and you know, things like that, and talking about how I'm good at video games. And, yeah, you might have a Fortune 500 job, but, you know, I play Call of Duty and I beat it, you know, things like that. So it was a lot of fun. And what's hilarious is, like, we haven't shown any of that on The Walking Dead, where Eugene is, like, berating someone.
Yeah, he's more of kind of a passive-aggressive, kind of scared type of a guy.
But, you know, obviously there were certain things that they wanted to see within the audition and the character, and, you know, thankfully I picked up on that and did it. You know, it was a lot of fun.
It's interesting because when the character was introduced, and this is the way they want you to believe it, I thought, okay, well, this guy, you know, you're going to save the world. All you got to do is get to Washington,
right,
and you're going to save the free world. And it was so well done when it was revealed that he was just scared and wanted somebody to hang out with.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
You know? Well, when you're getting these scripts, is it one week at a time? Do you know if there's some sort of a character arc? How does that work when you're filming the show? Just the past episodes that you've done.
Yeah, it varies. When I took the job in season 4, I knew that I was lying about having the cure.
Okay.
Now, they didn't make that announcement to the whole cast.
Sure.
Although I'm sure some of the cast, like...
Just to you.
Yeah. I'm sure some of the cast knew that. I mean, they're not like, hey, don't tell anyone. Mm-hmm. But, like, they just kind of only told me. They didn't make an announcement or anything. I didn't know when that reveal was going to come. And I'm sorry if you're listening to this and we just spoiled The Walking Dead for
it happens.
You,
I get in trouble all the time. Listen, that was like a year ago.
Yeah, it's been a while. So
if you haven't watched it and you're listening to this, if you're a Walking Dead fan, you know, get your shit together.
So they... So they kind of tell you little bits and pieces here and there. I just had a meeting about season 6, mm-hmm. right? It's so vague, and they did this for season 5 too. It's so vague what they tell you. They're like, Eugene's going to deal with the thing that might push him to a point in his life of, and they might use something. Some other word. And I'm just like, that tells me nothing.
Right.
Like, I don't know. That could be anything, you know? But for whatever reason, that's what they want to tell you. And then there's other moments where, you know, like, I knew I was lying, so I know certain things.
Did that help you as to act as Eugene? And since you knew that deep down inside he's lying, did that help you to perform when you were acting as him?
A little bit. I mean, I appreciated having the knowledge, but what I ultimately, I think Scott Gimple, our showrunner, was like, man, you just had so many layers, like... You know, you're like 4 or 5 levels into a con, and I didn't look at it that way. I wanted myself to believe that I had the cure, or that Eugene had the cure, and that he was going to solve the apocalypse and all that. But if I started thinking about, yeah, but I'm lying, and then you start tipping your hat a little bit. So
gotcha.
I just kind of wanted to be as truthful as possible and just kind of shed off the rest of it and just let the audience really dictate what they want to believe,
there's
instead
some
of
layers
me
there.
Making him do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that was, I mean, and that was cool, but it was fun. I'll tell you this, like, so that reveal came in the comics, since Eugene is a comic book character. And I thought it came a lot quicker than I thought it would. I was hoping we'd hold out to like season 6, you know, because now all of a sudden, like, well, the clock's ticking.
Do you read the comic and see like what happens to Eugene? Is there like a final demise of Eugene or something? Because I don't read the comic and I don't want to start because I just like seeing the story unfold the way that, you know, that the producers and the showrunners want to see it unfold.
Yeah, I have read the comic. I'm probably 5 to 10 issues behind at this point. Mm-hmm. And it's really fun to read that because it's like a different version of The Walking Dead, but they're completely separate from each other. Like on the show, they do things that they can't even, you know, I think people are wondering if the people with the W's on their foreheads, I don't think they're in the comics. I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, they like to be able to insert characters like that into the show and then just kind of throw everyone off. So I have looked ahead, and I know Eugene's still alive, but it also tells me nothing because there are people alive in the comics that are dead on the show.
Right.
So it's like, you know,
like Andrea, I think, is still alive. Yeah.
Yeah. And Daryl's not even in the comics. So it's like, I can't keep looking at the comics and going, this is, you know, where I'm going with Eugene, you know.
So when
knows?
You guys are filming, like you film over the course of 3, 4, 5 months, whatever it is, do you get each episode script one at a time?
Yeah, so we'll get one script, and the day before we start shooting that script, we'll get the next script.
Okay.
So that way we kind of have a little bit of a look ahead, and it takes 2 weeks or so to shoot one episode. And so we'll be able to look at it that way. And then, you know, everyone wants to know about getting killed off, you know,
yes,
like what that's like. So they try to give the person they're killing off, from what I understand, because I haven't been killed off yet, but they try and give them like a 3-episode heads up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they can kind of make plans if they need to.
Yeah, like work plans?
Yeah.
Book me on the convention circuit.
Right. You're going to have a lot of free time. You might want to call your agents. And
yeah. Have you ever been called into the producer's office because they wanted you to, you know, fix your jacket or something, and you were thinking, this is it?
Like, oh, yeah. Every time they phone you, I'm like, oh, what? What did I do? I'm sorry, man.
Don't say it.
And he's like, no, I just want to say great work in the last episode. I'm like, don't do this to me, man.
See, that's the thing. I did Dancing with the Stars, and
right.
Okay, learning the routine was hard enough, and it's like, you know, a 7-day-a-week thing and 8 hours a day. But the hardest part is when you get down and they start announcing Monday is the show, Tuesday is the announcement, and you're waiting in this room, and it really is like being in death row. Like,
yeah.
They're calling the next one, it's still not me. And then when they put you in the last two, it's like
you're
going to die. It's terrible. And I'm seeing, like, when you get, like, here's this week's script. Okay, yeah. You can read it.
Oh, you go to the last page right away and see if you're alive, and then work backwards.
Yeah, exactly,
you know?
Right? Exactly.
That's, it's frustrating because, you know, obviously you want to, if you're on a show like I love the show Black-ish right now on ABC. It's hilarious. Like, they're not killing off their characters. It's just a fun family sitcom,
right? You're
signed
for 2 seasons or 3 seasons, and you're going to live.
There you go. But, like, on this show, like, literally you're walking on eggshells. Like, do I, you know, say this to the producer? They might take it the wrong way, and then they might kill me off. Like, this is a show that's actively looking to kill people off.
So right.
And, like, the great thing is, like, everybody's nice. Everybody's the coolest person to hang out with. And I think it's because nobody wants to be a diva and get killed off. That's like... What a great device to use to like have an awesome working environment.
What a great carrot to dangle, a blackened carrot. Like, we could kill you.
We could kill you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to wreak havoc with the contractual negotiations. It's like, if you don't pay me more, what?
Yeah,
if you don't pay more, what?
What?
Because there was a scene in the finale of season 5, I guess, where Rick gets taken down by a zombie. And I'm like, he could die. Like, if Rick dies... the show would continue, because I remember watching Game of Thrones, the first season I came into it,
right.
The Sean Bean, the king, is on the cover of the DVD, and guess what? Here's another spoiler, guys. He's dead by the end of the first season.
Yeah.
Like, you can't do that.
You're like, what is going on?
He's
what
the
is
hero.
This show about now?
Yeah, now what do I do? See, that's the beauty of Walking Dead. You just don't know what's going to happen.
You don't know, but what it does is it sucks you in even more.
That's right.
Because you're like, wait, how are they going to manage without so-and-so? Mm-hmm. How are they going to manage without Herschel now that he's got his head chopped
great
off?
Great call. Great call.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, and the funny thing is Andrew Lincoln, who plays Rick, even he says he doesn't feel safe, and I believe him.
Well, that's what I mean, yeah.
I mean, people go, but they're not going to kill off Rick. They're not going to kill off Carl.
Yeah.
Like, they're kind of the three that they're... any one of them could go.
Sure.
You know, and you know, the fans go, oh, we'll riot if you kill off Daryl. Yep, go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead and riot, because you're just going to keep watching now.
Of course you will.
Keep watching.
And that is because, you know, I was thinking about midway through this season, I was like, because I've been watching from the start. I'm a huge zombie fan. Love the concept of the show. But I'm like, how many times can they go look in the forest and there's some zombies come and quick, quick, and then they end up at some kind of sanctuary that ends up turning evil.
Uh-huh.
But then the last 3 episodes of this season – blew my mind. Like, it just – there's it never ends. For example, you were involved when I can't remember the character's name. Everyone loves Chris. When he dies.
Oh, Noah.
Noah in the revolving door. I mean, that was probably the best death in the show history.
Yeah.
Like, there's just so much creativity and so many ways you can go with it. It really is engrossing.
Well, Scott Gimple, who runs our show, Matt Negrete wrote that episode and went to Matt and said, listen, I don't know how – we can kill him. I just need this, and that, and throw this on. I mean, he pretty much asked a waitress for an order that you could give me a taco with put a hamburger on top of it and like a pickle on the inside, like just weird stuff. And Matt Negrete like made this device of this turnstile, you know, where they would get caught, and because like Glenn needed to see the death, No one needed to die. Nicholas needed to cause it. Like all these sorts
you
of things.
You drive by to draw of the
It was so brilliant
away.
How yeah. they wrote that. And I was, I mean, I'm reading this going, oh my gosh, like we have the smartest writers in the world, you
so
know?
So creative.
It's pretty rad.
What was what's Noah's real name?
Oh my God.
Okay, well.
Tyler James Williams.
Tyler. So yeah. So was Tyler come to you like a couple weeks before and say, hey man, I'm getting it in two seasons or two episodes? Or do they keep it secret too?
They, some people, well, after they, so like they'll tell, like they told Emily Kinney who played Beth.
Mm-hmm.
And then she kept it to herself, but like an episode later, they started calling the rest of us to let us know. You know, they just want to let her have that feeling, or not the feeling of hopelessness. No, they wanted to let her know that she's not going to be around and that, you know, she can take care of her affairs.
Mm-hmm.
With, you know, they ask that that character doesn't tell the cast, the rest mm. of the cast. Tyler, the interesting thing about him, so he came in as a recurring character. He was only supposed to do two episodes. And then they signed him on for four episodes. And then next thing you know, he's on, you know, they re-sign him again for like two more. And then he's like, oh, this is great. And he's a great guy, and everyone loved having him around. And he's an amazing actor, and we're like, this is a cool character. And then all of a sudden, the call stopped coming of, we're going to give you more episodes. And he's like, I'm out of here.
He knew it.
Yeah, he knew it. And he started telling us. We're like, no, man, they love you. You're great. You're going to be around. No. they were setting it up big time.
Do you guys have like a party or for the deceased
yeah.
characters?
Yeah, like, so yeah. we'll do – they call them death dinners. And I know they don't like to use that term. They're trying to change that because they don't want to focus on the death. The death, they want to focus on the life mm-hmm. and of the character and the great work that the actor's done. And we usually go to a restaurant and get a private room and, you know, have a big meal and toast the person and tell them to get out of here, you know?
Like, once again, it's pretty pretty stressful.
It is stressful.
Show,
it's
know?
Really sad. And, like, different people, because the cast is so large, I mean, you know, we all love each other and we all hang out. We
yeah.
have, you know, we live in all kind of in the same neighborhood in Atlanta and we hang out together even when we're not filming and that sort of thing. But as large as this group is, there's different pockets of friends. So
yeah, different cliques. And,
yeah, like I know Norman, I love him and we text and everything, but I'm not hanging out with him mm-hmm. all the time. You know, he's got his pals and whatnot.
Who are your buddies?
I'm good pals with Cudlitz and Steven Yeun.
Gotcha.
You know, Glenn and Abraham. And, you know, Christian Serratos, who plays Rosita, is becoming a good friend.
Cool.
Actually, the whole crew that we've been dubbed Gratum, Glenn, Rosita, Eugene, Abraham, Tara, and Maggie. So Lauren Cohen's in there, too, and Alana Masterson. But, you know, so we'll hang out. And so, like, if one of them dies, that's going to affect me way
sure.
more than if, you know, someone else died that I don't hang out with
yeah,
as
yeah,
much.
Of course.
Because obviously we're friends and that's, you know, we're hanging out all the time. So it sucks like from a character standpoint to lose that person, but then from a friendship and an actor standpoint, you're like, oh, I don't get to work with this person anymore.
Yeah.
That stinks.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Did it say in the character breakdown originally that he had a mullet, or is this what you brought to the table?
No.
Because you do have, like, I was, you have a little bit
I
of
got a little bit,
little
I got
hockey
a little
hair. You call that hockey hair where I come from.
Yeah, well, I think people with hockey hair look better than what Eugene looks like, you know, or like a nice Euro mullet looks way cooler.
Yeah.
No, in the original breakdown, he had a mohawk.
Oh.
And okay, so for me, I want to look as ridiculous as possible when I'm doing like when I was on that sitcom, I had like lamb chop sideburns.
Right.
It's like, I want to stick out because
yeah.
like, I don't want to get lost in the shuffle or stand in the background. I want to like stick out. And so I was really excited about maybe the potential of having a mullet or a mohawk. But then I was also scared because I got like these moles on my head that like if you shave my head, it's going to get – it's like, oh, we made a mistake. You know?
Kill him. Kill
so,
him off.
Yeah. Instantly, first episode, he's gone. But they – Eugene is in the comics and he's got a mullet in the comics. And so that was actually how I figured out who it was is because I started Google searching – You know,
so they never told you what you were auditioning for.
They never told me what I was auditioning for until, you know, because they used a fake name, Wayne Kesey.
Right.
Until I booked the job and I spoke with Gimple and he said, oh, okay, so the character is Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
He's in the comics. I'm like, oh, yeah, of course, Eugene. And he's like, oh, you read the comics. I'm like, yeah, but I hadn't yet. I just did like Google searching and stuff.
The number one rule of show business. Anytime they ask you something, of course.
Yeah.
Can you ride a horse? Yes.
Yes.
Can you skydive? Absolutely. Read the comics twice.
Yeah, you have to BS your way through this business. Yeah,
otherwise,
absolutely.
This
won't
business
work,
is based
man.
On BS.
Yeah. It's like, oh, how long do I have? 2 weeks? Yeah, I can learn how to surf.
Easy.
By then,
you know? Of course. So, I mean, but that wouldn't, Eugene with the Mohawk doesn't fit to me. It seems like just the way that, even especially with the accent that you have, he's kind of a southern guy, it seems.
Yeah.
He would have a mullet.
A mullet definitely fits. And I think if you have a Mohawk, you're probably a little cooler
mm-hmm.
than if you have a mullet.
A little more rebellious.
Yeah. Eugene definitely wouldn't have the Mohawk.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I'm glad to have the mullet. At first, dude, I'll be honest, man, I didn't. I was like, because I got, like, my hair is like your color. It's,
yeah.
It's normally blonde and you know, I keep it, you know, actually we could be brothers with our hair, right? But so they gave me a flat top. And actually, so I have like really, I have really large feet. I got size 15.
Wow.
And so I'm sitting in the hair and makeup chair and they're doing my hair the first time. And one of our hairdressers also has large feet. And he was telling me about this place in Atlanta that they cater to like dudes with big feet. And like all the NBA players, like when they come through town to play the Atlanta Hawks, they stop at the store to buy their shoes. And I'm getting excited. I'm like adjusting in my seat and everything as the woman is cutting my hair into a flat top and took out this big divot. And she yelled at me. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is like my first day. I'm like, they're going to kill me off now. And so she had to make the flat top even shorter just to even it out. And it was like the worst haircut. And then they, of course, they leave the hair in the back and they dye it brown. And I'd never had it, you know, anything but blonde hair. And I was just like devastated. And so we're in like rural Georgia. And I was like, can you please take me to Walmart so I can at least get a hat? And they're like, okay. And I walk into Walmart and I saw like five dudes with the same haircut. And I'm like, oh, okay, never mind. It's all right.
Yeah, dude, you're in the right part of the country. If that's going to be the case, you're going to fit right into some of the rural Georgia.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. And the people in Georgia are awesome. I mean, mm-hmm. they're, you know, I love being in the South.
Mm-hmm.
I hate the humidity and the weather, but like the people, the restaurants, the, you know, landscape, the great places to hike and fish and all that. It's amazing. I love being down there, but man, I got to have a mullet.
Where are you from?
Phoenix.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're from the other side of the country, basically.
Yeah.
And you said you started up as a stand-up comic.
Yeah. So what I did, well, we could back it up even further. I actually did radio for 14 years.
Wow. In Phoenix?
In Phoenix, yeah.
What station?
KNIX.
I'm wondering if I know that one. What's the big rock radio station there?
KUPD?
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of stuff with them.
Who, like John Holmberg? Was that the guy?
John Holmberg, or? And there's one guy with a name, an afternoon guy. I don't know I can't remember what he was called, you know, the Rebel or the Bandit.
Oh,
or
sure.
You know what it is, you know?
Yeah, I loved working in radio. So I started when I was 14 years old. I would call up this radio show, and it was back in like the early 90s when country music was just exploding with Garth Brooks and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And I listened to this radio show because it was like if David Letterman had a radio show. They were just wacky and like really eclectic and weird
yeah.
and funny, and I loved listening to it. And I didn't really care for the country music as much. And, you know, slowly but surely became a fan of the music. But I would call up and request that song "Achy Breaky Heart" by Billy Ray Cyrus,
the king of the mullets.
The king of the mullets. This whole thing has come full
See?
Circle, man.
We've got a real we got a common ground.
I gotta get Billy Ray to go to a Waffle House with me. I just buy him dinner and say thank you.
He grew his bangs out now, though. He's got like
oh,
the,
did
yeah.
He?
Oh. I think I saw him on Hannah Montana once, and he has like the long one length bangs going.
What were you
on.
Doing watching Hannah
well,
Montana?
Well, don't worry about it. I'm a big Hannah Montana
I know,
fan.
I know you have daughters, but come
yeah,
on, man.
That's why.
You don't have to watch
it. I was sucked in to the Hannah Montana. And a little bit curious to see what Cyrus was up to nowadays
yeah, right.
as well.
So I would call up this radio station and I would just do a stupid voice. It was right when that song was it hit its peak and people started to turn on it. They're like, okay, we've heard too
as
much.
As always, right? Yeah.
Everybody
him.
Has
now
a shelf line, yeah. right? So I would call up and I would just do a dumb voice and I was like, hey, can you play Achy Breaky Heart for me? I'm like 14 years old.
What accent is that, by the way?
Okay, so there's this kid in my
East
high
Indian
school. It was, I don't know, I don't even know what it was, but this kid in my high school, his name was Leonard. I don't want to say his last name.
Right.
But he was, I don't think he was Filipino, but he grew up in the Philippines.
Okay.
And so he had like a weird, he just had a weird accent, you know? Mm. And so I could impersonate him. And so that's, I just took his voice and was calling up, waiting for the school bus, just like screwing around. And they're like, yeah, what's your name? And I hadn't thought that far.
Right.
I was like, and the first word out of my mouth was Kako, which I don't know what that was, but I just said Kako. And they're like, oh, okay, Kako, what's your deal? And I'm like, just never broke character. I was like, well, I was born in England, but my father was in the Royal Air Force, and so we moved to the Philippines when I was two.
The Philippines.
Yeah. And so they're like, oh, okay, so you're not faking this accent. I'm like, no. You know, I kept the character. And they're like, well, Kako, call us every day, all right? I'm like, great. So I literally called every day, and I became this, like, mini celebrity on their show.
This violent radio celebrity.
Yeah, and what they ended up doing was the whole bit was, like, Kako couldn't find a job. Mm-hmm. They were always like, well, you know, Kako, what are you going to do today? And I'm like, well, I'm going to look for a job, and then I'll ride the bus to the mall and look for chicks. And they're like, oh, okay, man. So
Kako
could never find a job, and people started calling up and saying, well, I got a landscaping company.
So people thought this was real.
They thought it was real, yeah. Man. No one knew it was fake.
Yeah.
And they're like, I got a landscaping company. You know, Kako can come work for me. And so I wouldn't – you know, they call me, you want this job? And I'm like, yeah, I'll go mow lawns. I don't care. And so – but I wouldn't show up mm-hmm. because I had to go to math class. I'm in high school, right? I told them I was like 26 years old, and right. I didn't look 26. I looked older than I was, but, you know, definitely didn't look 14 or 26. So then the guys would call up the next day, and they'd be like, you know, yeah, Kako's a lazy bum. He never showed up for work.
Kako!
Yeah, I'm like, sorry, I overslept, or, you know, I missed the bus, you know, like all this weird stuff. So they started inviting Kako down to the radio station, and – I'm hanging out in studio, and like instantly they see this big, dumb-looking white kid walk in. They're like, you're not Filipino. And that's the moment that could have broke me, but I never broke the character. I go, no, I was born in England. My father was in the Royal Air Force. That's we moved to the Philippines.
Philippines.
They're like, oh, okay.
So
like,
you were doing that. No one knew that you were.
No one knew, wow. Man. And so I became like this fixture on their show. I was hanging out at the radio station so much. And I was calling up as other characters, and they had no idea. And at one point they said we were off the air, and they're like, Kako, you spend all your time down here. We can't find you a job. You should just work here. We'll pay you. And that's when I got scared. I was like, this is my real voice. And like, this had gone on for like 9 months, right? And they're like, dude, are you kidding? And I said,
what? You broke it right
there? I broke the voice right there. And because I was scared. I was 14, 15 years old going, they're going to ask to see my ID. I got to fill out like tax forms or something.
Social security.
Yeah, right. So they said, I said, by the way, I'm also this guy, that guy. I like named off everyone that I would call in as.
Oh, so you were calling in as a bunch of different characters.
A bunch of different characters. I called in as a guy named Josh who would like say, hey, can you play the phone call from Kako from yesterday? I missed it. You know, I'm like
promoting your own
marketing
stuff.
Myself. Yeah. And they're like, so I said, yeah, I'm all these guys too. And they're like, dude, you're half the people that ever call this show. You need to work here. And so I started working. I produced this radio show. We became syndicated, and we had a great time and a fun run. And slowly but surely in that time, I started to get antsy and a little bored with it, and I needed to have another outlet. So I started to do stand-up comedy.
Mm.
And you know, I had some friends that were doing it, and I'd give them some jokes, and you know, my jokes were going over well, as they would tell them. So I'm like, oh, I could do this. And yeah, I started doing stand-up, and I got on Last Comic Standing like 2 years into that, and that kind of set the table for everything else.
Did you ever use Kako as one of your bits?
I went on stage as Kako once, but the audience knew that it wasn't – they knew who I was. Like they knew it was, oh, that's Josh. Like we've seen his show before. So it didn't
work. You need to get one of those deals like Rob Schneider used to have where he would do all the movies that Adam Sandler wouldn't do and do a Kako movie.
Oh, right.
Like getting a nice little $3 million budget, like Kako, you know, male gigolo or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, something, man. That would be a lot of fun. Get some like a prosthetic nose or just like something to change your physical appearance enough.
Yeah, one of them weird kind of maybe like the kids from the Gotti family haircut where they get the big kind of – it gets all sculpted and black and dark. Because actually when you go on IMDb, Kaka was listed as your nickname.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I did know that. Yeah. I think I talked about this once before, and then Don is another one of my nicknames that someone put up there. And that, and I don't know how that came about.
The wonders of social media, right?
Yeah, people just, they're like, I think his nickname's Don.
Yeah, Don Kako is
Don
what it
Kako,
is.
Don Kako, there you go.
How is, since you've been, because you've been on The Walking Dead starting midway through season 4, which was last year.
Right.
Right. So how has your kind of recognizability gone up when you walk down the street? Are people recognizing you now?
Oh, absolutely, man. It's insane. And it's gotten to the point – it's interesting because, like, you know, it's still all very new to me. So when the show is airing, it's, you know, the fever pitch is higher. Like, mm-hmm. the people know. But, you know, like, I went to the gym this morning, and I know you can't tell, but I went to the gym, believe me. And, like, I just played basketball, and there's a guy that came up. He's like, hey, man, can I get a picture? I was like, you know, sure. Like, it still throws me off because I'm not expecting it. But, you know, there are moments where I can walk into a situation, and I go, this, like, I'm going to get hit up for pictures or autographs or whatever. Mm. And I'm completely fine with it. It's a lot of fun to meet the fans, and I myself am a fan, and I'm still geeking out over it, you know?
Yeah.
But, in Atlanta, it's pretty bad. Like, we can't go out as a cast together. So we usually just stay in and go into someone's home and play games or whatever. But if we all go out to eat, I mean, it's over. If we don't have a private room, like, we have absolutely – there's no reason
non-stop.
For us to go out to eat. Non-stop.
Yeah, yeah.
A conveyor belt of people coming
right,
up
right.
And that sort of thing. And, you know, it's – but like I said, it's fun and it's exciting. But I can see how it could take its toll after a
but
while.
But, you know, I mean, you have your phone number up online.
That's not my phone number, though. Oh, did you call it? You didn't call it?
Well, I could. No, I didn't. I didn't call it.
I think it's well. When I did it, it was just being dumb. Like, I put online. It's like one of those numbers where you call up and they're like, "Hey, thanks for calling. You're absolutely wasting your time by calling this number." Like, one of those stupid automated messages. But I think, like, Princess Cruise Lines, like, bought that number, and so now people are calling, and they're getting, like, a sales pitch. And they're like, hey, man, I called your cell phone. Like, thanks for the cruise.
Well, yeah, I was, that's what I was trying to get you on the show. I called the number. I'm like, I'm just going to call him.
Yeah, right.
I did that once. I was actually, I was at a McCartney concert, and my friend was there. And for some reason, I was DMing him. Like, hey, dude, are you here? I'm here on Twitter. And then by mistake, I sent him a DM with my phone number.
Oh, right.
And then about 30 seconds later, I start getting calls. And it's another call. And I'm watching the show, and my phone is like, bzz, 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 bzz. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Turns out that I didn't DM him my phone number. I actually tweeted it. So I got like 500 calls and 500 texts within like 10 minutes. And I'm like, what am I going to do? So I just didn't sell it. I just stone cold it. I stone faced it, and I didn't answer any of them, or didn't respond. I didn't say, guys, whatever. I just let it go. And after about a week, I got like 200 calls, and then 2 weeks, 100 calls, and then finally nothing.
Then
once in a while, I'll still get it. So that's why when I saw your number up there, I thought, well, maybe what's the big deal? I mean, you probably would just not answer if people were actually calling you.
That's funny. I have given people my phone number. You know, different drivers. If you know, I'm getting a ride to the airport or whatever, like things like that. And for the most part, like, you know, 99% of them are fine. But every once in a while, there's that person who, like, they're like, well, I got your number now. I guess we're friends, right? And they're, like, texting all the time. And I do the same thing. I just, like, ignore it. I'm like, no, this was just so you can get in touch with me for that one thing.
Do you ever get, like, that number? It's like, hey, man, how you doing? It's just a number. And I always do the same thing. Like, hey, dude, who is this? I lost all my numbers.
Yeah.
Who's this?
I know. Well, so I used to think that was BS when people would say, like, oh, new phone. And I'm like, you totally deleted me. It was just fine, you know. But I did get a new phone and lost half my contacts. I was like, oh, crap. And I was able to figure out who most of the people were. But, yeah, I have been getting a few numbers.
You get that, like, sometimes, right?
Yeah. And plus, sometimes it'll pop up and you'll see, like, the thread of messages from, like, 4 years ago.
Sure, sure, yeah.
But, like, even reading those, you're like, it's like a puzzle. You're like, I don't know.
Like,
I still don't
know
who you are. Like, when did we eat lunch?
Is this a guy or a girl? Or I'm not sure exactly what this is.
Yeah, I'm like, did we make out? Like, yes. I'm like, okay, it could still be a guy or a girl. I don't know.
I'm not sure which it is. Be more specific. Are you hermaphrodite? What are you? So how long do you have off now between the next season starting?
We go back to work in 3 weeks.
Oh, because I guess probably you've been
off.
So
we finished at like Thanksgiving, like around like mid-November. And then, you know, we've been off, and I've been super busy doing other stuff, which is great. And literally, I think this week was the first – or when did the finale air? Last week?
Last week. Yeah, not
a little bit to do last
– not 2 days ago, but like last –
like a week ago.
9 days ago, whatever it was, yeah.
But like since the finale's over, like I've been able to like breathe a little bit more and just I think this might be like the last bit of thing that I have like any sort of responsibility towards. Now I'm like I'm just gonna nap for 3 weeks and then go to work.
Are you under some kind of like what's it called, like a silence order or a gag order that you?
Oh yeah, like a non-disclosure.
Non-disclosure, yeah.
Yeah, they don't want us talking about anything.
And of course, why would you want to?
Again, they're trying to kill you off. Like, why do I give them a reason?
Yeah,
they make us sign contracts that they'll sue us for $1 million if we if we say anything.
Really?
Yeah.
So since you started on the show, then have there been like, are you getting more calls for more work? And like, is it, like, whenever you're on a hot thing in Hollywood, that's when you usually get your best.
Yeah, you
chances.
Get all the attention. Yeah, absolutely. I've had. I can't really say
other stuff
about this.
Other secretive stuff.
Because even though I didn't sign a non-disclosure, I don't want to tip anything. But I got a call yesterday about something that I'm sure you're a huge fan of too, and from like our childhood. That I was like, oh man, if this pans out, this is gonna be like the pinnacle.
I'm sniffing.
Yeah,
I'm sniffing.
So I was like, oh man, I want this so bad, and like it shoots before I go back to work. So
wow.
I'm like, oh please, please, please. Whereas like 2 years ago, before I was on the show, I wouldn't have gotten that call.
Yeah, can we speak to Kako, please?
Yes, hello. It's Power Rangers. You're like, no, man, that's not for me.
Well, dude, I mean, that's the thing. And if it is what you're thinking that it might be, then, you know, if you're going to be on the dark side or whatever it may be. But still, like you said, you're now in the public eye, you know,
in conversations about things that, like I said, previously wouldn't have been a part of.
Right.
And that's exciting. Even if it doesn't pan out,
and I guess I'm not saying this is what it is, but even if it is, you know, you're getting a call about being in Star Wars or being in Star Trek or being in the new Bond movie or whatever it may be, they wouldn't have given you the time of day. Like you said, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and there've been a few like, there's been some like really cool things like Stephen King tweeted about me.
Nice.
And I was like, whoa! Like, I'll be honest, I'm not a big Stephen King fan. His books and movies scare me.
No, wait, no, this is Hollywood. Are you a big Stephen King fan?
I'm a huge Stephen King fan. I loved it.
And my favorite, Pet Cemetery, Cemetery for Pets. Oh, how crazy was that?
Like literally, they bury pets there.
So what did he say?
He was saying. He was talking about some line of dialogue that Eugene had and thought I delivered it perfectly. And I was like, oh, man, that's really cool.
It's pretty cool that, you know, Stephen King is watching
your
work.
Yeah, because I'm a huge fan of his.
Of course, man. Every book, every word. But, just quirky things, man. You know, I always try and have some sort of background and sometimes – but something's standing out here I have to ask you about. It says you're a qualified hot air balloon pilot.
Yeah.
Is this another one of like these phone numbers that you're supposed to call here for a qualified answers?
I am a hot air balloon
How
pilot.
Do you become a hot air balloon pilot? Who does that? Is that still a thing?
It is definitely a thing. So growing up in Arizona, where do you live?
I live in Florida.
Oh, okay.
But I'm from Canada, Winnipeg, Manitoba, where there's...
Oh, so I'm sure summertime they have a lot of balloons
up
there,
I guess.
Right?
I never really saw it. I'm just thinking Wizard of Oz the whole time.
Right. No, that's what we use it for. We go looking
for
the land
looking
of Oz.
Sure, for Oz, man. Absolutely.
So my dad got a hot air balloon ride for his birthday 1 year and, like, became addicted to it. He's like, I'm buying a balloon. And so it cost about as much as, like, a used car. And he went out and bought a balloon when we were kids. And I have a very eccentric, very eclectic family, man. And
Dad, can I have the keys to the hot air balloon?
Yeah. No, your sister has
it. No.
But he bought it, and as kids, we were like, cool, this is great. But like, we kind of realized we were like, not outcasts, but like people were looking at us funny. Mm. Like, who has a hot air balloon? Because some, you know, families will have a... mountain bikes or maybe a boat or something.
Yeah, like an RV.
We were the idiots with the balloon. And the crazy thing is, so we did foster care. So we'd have kids, you know, we'd do emergency care. But like if we were planning on going ballooning on Saturday morning and we got a kid overnight, well, we're not going to not go ballooning. So this kid is like in this new home and we're like, come on, we're going ballooning. Like I want to track some of these guys down and just find out like, hey man, are you okay?
It's a good way to keep them disciplined too. Listen, if you don't eat your dinner, we're going to send you away in the hot air balloon.
Yeah. Yeah, we're out in the – we're packing up the balloon right now,
going
man.
Going above the Atlantic Ocean. You know what happens then, right? So, yeah, you got to find these guys and say what happened.
Be like, dude, are you okay? Because I know you had some issues, like you were in a foster home, but, like, we didn't have any part of your issues, right? But we – Yeah, so we had a balloon, and like it wasn't like a company or anything. It was just a family recreation vehicle, and we would go out on the weekends and take our friends up. And
so, what do you do? Like, how do you drive it?
You don't drive it. You kind of float in the air. You let the wind dictate where you're going to go. So if you want to go west, you just change your altitude till you find wind that's going to take you west. Mm. But you may never find that wind. You may end up east into a bunch of homes or something. So
is it like, is there like a lever with gas that shoots up? And
yeah. So you have
higher?
You have propane tanks, and they have tubes that run up into, you know, gas lines that run up into some burners. And so what ends up happening is you have the actual balloon, and you know, heat makes it rise. So you just continue to burn the inside of the balloon to heat up the air, and it will take you higher into the atmosphere. Then, if you want to go down, you pull this, you know, cord, this rip line, and it opens up the top of the balloon and lets the air escape without collapsing the balloon. And then now there's less hot air in there, and it takes you back down.
So do you have like a landing strip, or is it just your backyard?
You just land wherever you got space, man.
Well, then how do you get it back to your house?
Oh, well, you have a chase vehicle. So you have a a lot of people, like the companies will have a van or maybe a trucks with, you know, a trailer. And I mean, the balloon is actually very compact. Mm. Like the biggest part of the balloon when it's stored is the basket. But you actually put the balloon in a bag and you just throw it in a trailer, and it's a really small trailer. But we had a station wagon. So like we're out in the middle of the desert in Arizona. Like you got all these balloon companies with like four-wheel drives out there. We're out there in a wood paneled station wagon with a bunch of foster kids like cruising around like, hey guys,
this is the crazy McDermott. Yeah. There they go.
But we'd have a lot of fun with that, and just you pretty much just go up, and wherever you can land it is where you land it. You need a lot of open space.
Did you ever crash?
All the time, man.
So how do you crash?
If the wind is too strong and you can come in a little too hot, you can come in, you can make your descent too quick and just boom. Like I've broken bones. I've broken passengers' legs before. Like,
I've broken foster kids' legs.
They were taken from us and put in another foster home. Like, yeah, literally, do not fly with me. I'm not a great pilot. But, like, I'll hurt you.
What's on the bottom of these baskets? Is there wheels on it or a crash pad? Or just
no, man. It's just wicker. It's wicker, man. you can come in so hot and just boom and just bounce that thing. And
wow.
It's, you know, you're supposed to kind of bend your knees that absorb some of the shock, but it's not good, man.
So it's not exactly the safest of Sunday afternoon. Let's go for a fly in the balloon.
Well, with me, I mean, I don't want to deter anyone from going up in a hot air balloon because, like, a really good pilot, because, like, it's deceptive what's online. I'm qualified.
That's
it
what
doesn't
I mean,
qualified. Mean I'm good.
Well, who qualified you?
My dad.
I imagine he had, like, a little scepter and went, I now qualify you a hot air balloon pilot.
Yeah, right. He's like, Dad, will you qualify me? Ask your mother. Oh, okay, Adam.
Did you have to get like a license or something like that?
You have to do a certain amount of hours solo, and then he was a commercial pilot because he had so many hours that he qualified himself as a commercial pilot where he could actually charge people to fly, whereas I could just bring up my friends or bring people up, but I couldn't charge them, although I would. I'd just make them pay for gas.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, why am I eating this cost?
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
it's
you're
like
the one that wants
kid,
to go up.
Your dad's car was going to throw in $5 for gas.
Yeah, right? So but he would – so you'd have to do, like, check rides, you know, go up and make sure that you – like, if you haven't flown after a certain period of time, you have to do, like, 3 takeoffs and 3 landings. And
like in front of, like, a driver's ed type
like
guy?
Yeah, with a guy – like my balloon, dad with the clipboard.
A ballooner's ed?
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, you go down – there's a little section of the DMV. They have a lot. It's really big.
It's like – I've never heard of a guy that – did this before.
Yeah, it's pretty weird, man. Like, my dad still has it, and I think he just patched it up. There was a hole in it, which is always like, hey, we just patched it. I'm like, oh, okay. All right, I guess we'll go up. But, like, he, you know, we have 17, I got 17 nieces and nephews. That's a lot of grandkids.
Mm.
And so, but he takes them up.
It's a lot of trips.
Yeah, a lot of trips.
Where do you get the propane fund? Is it like where you go get for your barbecue at the grocery store?
No, you'd have to go to like the KOA, Campgrounds of America. That's where we would go. So like, you know, because you get like an RV pulling up there and they need their propane and everything. And you roll in there and some toothless dude runs out and fills up your tanks. And
when I was a kid, my dad did not buy a hot air balloon. He bought an RV. And that was like if you were on the road in your RV – you would look for a COA, KOA, Campgrounds of America, campground with a K, and that would be like the Hyatt Regency of campgrounds, right? And I remember one year somebody stole our motorhome when it was parked, and then when we finally got it back, I'll never forget, there was a Deep Purple cassette in the in the dash, and when I was a kid, I was like, Deep Purple's evil music, like this is Satan music, because the guy who stole my dad's RV was listening to Deep Purple. To this day, whenever I see Deep Purple, the first thing is like, devil music.
Yeah, right.
Thieving music.
Yeah,
the thievery.
That's so funny. Yeah, there's some characters at the KOA. Did they find the RV?
They did
KOA?
Find it with the Deep Purple cassette in it.
Yeah,
that's what I mean. That was an addition. Like,
but was it at a KOA?
No, it was. Oh. I don't even know where it was. It was kept under wraps on that. I'm not sure exactly what happened. I remember there was a Deep Purple cassette and there was like cigarette butts.
So cigarettes are really evil.
They must have been teenagers.
Yeah, right. And listening to music and
yeah, exactly.
They got. I remember lava lamps were like an evil thing for me.
Oh, really?
Growing up, yeah. Because I think did I go to my like uncle's house or someone who just listened to music that I wasn't allowed to listen to, and they had a lava lamp. My mom just didn't like lava lamps, and I wasn't allowed to go in there. But I thought the reason I couldn't go in there was because of the lava lamps. I didn't realize it was because of the music. Yeah. It was listening like Megadeth or something, yeah. And I'm like, oh,
it's the lava lamps. That's evil. What it is. Have you kind of jumping? I was just thinking about Walking Dead. I mean, finally Eugene has killed a couple zombies.
Yeah.
How do you guys do that? I mean, there's obviously some CGI involved, but there's still guys coming at you. And like, did you stab one in the head, or how did you kill the zombies that you killed? Because I think you've killed two so far.
I've killed two, although I saw something online that gave me credit for eight, and I did not kill eight.
That's because, the same people that said this is your phone number on Facebook.
Yeah, right.
Those sons of bitches.
I did in the script for that episode. Eugene wasn't supposed to kill them. It said that he's carrying Tara out and he shoots at the walkers, and like I think he kneecaps one of them and like shoots the other one back in the shoulder enough to kind of buy him some time to get out. But it clearly said he did not shoot him. Well, when they insert the muzzle flash from the bullets and all that from the gun and the blood splatters and whatnot, they decided to kill the walkers for me. I was like, oh, okay, I guess that's a huge – to me, that's a huge moment for Eugene. But
sure
the writers who approved it were like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
So – but what we do is we have – I'd say most of the guns are real. There's a few that are like plastic, but you can't tell. And they're always empty. Every once in a while, we use blanks, but you have to be standing far away from the gun if you're using blanks, because you could still get hurt from the muzzle flash. Or I think I may be wrong, but I think that's how Brandon Lee died.
Yeah,
he died with they were firing blanks.
There was
but
a dummy blank in the chamber.
There was like a malfunction because things can still fly out. And so they want to like be as safe as possible. And so we actually try not to use blanks if we can. It's just, everyone's got to wear earplugs, live fire. It's just crazy. But, yeah, you just shoot the guns. And then the walkers go through the training where they know how to snap their head back. And a lot of times they'll watch for your gun to, like, jolt, like you've hit it. And then they know to go down. A lot of times they'll cut to that anyway. So even if the timing's off, it's okay. Or someone will say, bang. And then that's their cue to fall down. With the knives, they'll have like a padding. It'll just be like a handle with no blade, with a little bit of padding on it with some green tape to do like green screen effect. And you jam that into their skull. And they're stunt people, so they're used to getting knocked in the head and whatnot. But you just jam them in the head with the pad, and then you pull that out, and then they go in later and draw in a blade with the blood and all that stuff. That's
pretty cool to see in
post,
awesome,
right? Pretty awesome,
man.
Yeah. Because sometimes, I'll be honest, we're shooting or we're stabbing things, and I'm like, this looks lame. And then you see it in post, and you're like, wow, that's amazing. I can't believe that.
So amazing, right?
Did I really kill that guy? I don't remember. It's pretty rad.
Last question for you, Josh. You said you're a Walking Dead fan. What is your favorite scene or favorite death in the whole history of the show? Is there one that stands out for you?
I would say... Well, for me, I mean, it's when Eugene admitted the truth to not having the cure to the apocalypse. But I feel like that's cheating if I count it as one of mine. So my favorite episode was when in season three when they stumbled upon Morgan and he was holed up in that apartment. He had all the writing on the walls.
Yeah.
And he had just gone crazy. And that whole scene between him and Rick where he just went nuts was so I was watching season three and just thinking like, I'm just kind of getting bored with this or whatever. And that episode came around and brought me back. And I was like, yes, this is awesome. So that's definitely my favorite scene, my favorite episode of that I'm not in of the whole show. And then my favorite death, I mean, I don't know because I don't really like it when people die. I like Herschel's death because it really messed me up, man.
It was such a shock. It's such a brutal shock. Too.
I wanted to meet Scott Wilson and David Morrissey, who plays the governor, and Herschel. And then I come in like the episode after they were killed. And so I had no idea that they were killed and because they didn't tell me. And I show up, I'm like, hey, where are they? And they're like, well, I guess now that you're part of the family, we can tell you they've died. And I was like, oh, crap. But I didn't know how they died until I watched the episode. And it shocked me, man.
It's one of the standouts of the show.
Yeah.
For me, both of them are in this season was the opening episode with the slaughterhouse where they were just
killing
the guys in the tub.
Yeah.
Dude, that was so brutal. Like, I still, like, watch that and think about it. Like, that will never go away, how brutal it was because it wasn't even zombies. It was guys on guys, much like Herschel, guy on guy, human on human.
Yeah.
You know?
It's scary because, like, everyone goes, okay, it's a walker. You can kill a walker.
Yeah.
Like, and it's as gruesome and gross as that can be. Like, it's justified. But when it's human on human, like you said.
Yeah.
It's pretty nasty. The people were asking, I would do interviews and they would say, well, so a lot of my listeners, maybe they don't watch the show or, you know, what can you tell us about the show that would get them to watch it? I'm like, can we just pick up whenever? And I go, yeah, come in, episode one, season five, it's fine. I had no idea it was going to be that brutal. I could just imagine all these, like, stay-at-home moms who don't watch any of this stuff going like,
we're
going to
watch
this
Walking Dead, apparently. It's a great show. Yeah. Actually, last question, you did a couple episodes of Mad Men.
Yeah.
Was this after you were already signed as Eugene?
Yeah.
So what did you do about the mullet?
They cut it.
What?
They cut the mullet. Cool, because they clip in extensions and make it a little longer. But it was right after we wrapped season four, and I came back and did a couple episodes of Mad Men, and they stripped out all the brown. They just like, we don't want it brown. We don't care what color it is. So they stripped the color out, and it became this like weird orange color. And after that, I ended up getting like these promo pictures done. So I have like these promo photos of me with orange hair, and I'm dying. But they literally just like just cut the mullet off and did it into a 60s haircut because it had gotten pretty long at that point. And then I did the second episode, and they had to do like a trim. And they didn't like give me a real cut. They just kind of combed it how they wanted and then cut off the excess. And so like I had this weird step cut in the back. My wife's like, you look ridiculous. Go get it cut. And I'm like, I can't. Like I'm going to go back and do The Walking Dead.
I'm in the 60s now. You have to get some Lloyds of London insurance on that mullet. Yeah, man. Right. No one touches the mullet. Okay?
$1 million mullet. Leave me alone.
$1 million mullet. There you go. Josh, man, it's been great talking to you. And I'm looking forward to the next season and to the super secret stuff you got going on. And if I ever see a hot air balloon with you in it, I'm running.
Do it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, dude.
I'm formally requesting a straight up do-over on that one.
That was so awesome, Josh McDermott. Eugene from The Walking Dead. Great guest, great guy. I'll tell you this. If I'm ever on the run from a zombie apocalypse, two things I'm going to do. One, I'm going to look for Josh McDermott to fly me away in a hot air balloon. He's a qualified hot air balloon pilot. And there's other thing that you're going to find in my bag when I get on the hot air balloon, DDP yoga. I'm going to be up 30, 40, 50, 60 feet in the air doing DDP yoga in a hot air balloon. That's what I'm going to do. You want to stay in shape and stay loose to get away from the zombies? DDP yoga is the way to go if you want to start living a healthier lifestyle, whether it's in a zombie apocalypse or whether it's right now. DDP's got it all covered in one program. Fitness, healthier eating, everything you need to get in the best shape of your life. And that's why I am in the best shape of my life. DDP yoga makes it so easy. You can do it anywhere, anytime, any place. I know I do. I do it on a tour bus, in a dressing room, in a hotel room. I do it in my own living room while I'm watching Walking Dead. That's right. That's exactly what I do. This program is truly designed to work for anyone, no matter how old you are, what kind of shape you're in. You can start at the beginner level and work your way up to advanced at your own pace. and the Max Pack is the way to go. You get everything you need to get in shape and live a healthier lifestyle your way. You get all the workouts on DVD. You get a grid chart to track your progress. You get a poster to help remember the 12 core positions of DDP yoga. You get recipes so you can eat on a healthy eating plan, man. You don't need to worry about zombies attacking you. You can escape them and eat well on your own with DDP yoga. You get all the workouts on MP3 so you can exercise on the go. I want you to go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to take advantage of a special offer only available to the Sexy Beast listeners of Talk is Jericho. ddpyoga.com/Jericho. You can find this great deal as well by going to podcast1.com, clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, then hitting the Talk is Jericho button. I want you to get in the best shape of your life. DDP can help you do that. I'm going to be using this on the road with Fozzy in just a few weeks. April 19th, first, I got a signing on my own at the Super Mega Fest in Marlborough, Massachusetts. That's supermegafest.com. That's on the Sunday. Come on down and join me for that. April 24th, Fozzy's playing 37 Main in Atlanta. It's called John's Creek on the outskirts. You can get your tickets and VIPs at FozzyRock.com. April 25th, we're doing Welcome to Rockville in Jacksonville for the second year in a row, the only band to be doing it 2 years in a row. Thank you very much. Then we're going out with Slash. May 18th, Concord Music Hall in Chicago. May 21st, Austin. May 23rd, Houston. May 24th, Dallas. Then on October 30th, we're going out on the high seas with the Kiss Navy on the Kiss Cruise. That's right, kisscruise.com. Kiss Cruise with a K. That's with the almighty Kiss. Paul Stanley, Gene Simmons, my buddies. We're going from Miami to Jamaica. We're going to be playing some rock and roll with one of the greatest bands of all time. We're really excited. And don't forget, next week, April 14th, I am going to be hosting the 10th Annual Podcast Awards in Las Vegas. That's going to be huge. April 13th, we got the debut of Nothing to Report on Comedy Central, my new web series. That's comedycentral.com. It's a huge Chris Jericho month. Go back and see John Cena live with Chris Jericho on the WWE Network. Huge success, huge hit, lots of fun, so much stuff going on. I want to thank you for being here. Thank the sponsors of the show, Burger King, Dollar Shave Club, DraftKings, DDP Yoga, Nature Box, and of course, Amazon. Thanks to you guys for supporting my sponsors, and thanks for supporting this show through my Amazon links. Easiest way to do that so I can keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. You know how to find my Amazon links, podcast1.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Click on Talk is Jericho. You'll see the links for the UK, the USA, the Canada. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show. No extra fees or hidden charges. We can keep doing this show for you, pay some bills, and you can do it without having to spend any extra cash. You're just doing your shopping. Help me out in the process. All right. Thank you so much. I love you, man. I love to love you, baby. Stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. Next Wednesday, the cast of my new Comedy Central web series, Nothing to Report, will be here. Nick Mundy, Clint Gage, Michael Truly. They directed it. They wrote it. They started it. It is one of the most funniest things you're ever going to see. They're called Team Tiger Awesome, and they are amazing. They're here next Wednesday. It's the Nothing to Report Wednesday. Check it out, though, starting Monday. ComedyCentral.com. Then join me on Wednesday. We're going to rock and roll like you've never been rocked before. All the episodes, we're going to talk about everything. I'm so excited. Let me tell you what, you watch Nothing to Report, if you don't laugh, I'll give you your money back. And that's a true, true statement. Yeah, boy.
Oh, hell yeah, score.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.